and said, here's what's going to happen.
People call you racist. People call you Islamophobic.
Money. And this is a mafia as well. The Islamic community is a mafia. Now, if Andrew Tate now decided he didn't believe in Islam.
What do you believe in? Are you a Christian or are you a Jew?
Cowardice. Because Islam has failed. Okay? Sneeko. I watched Sneeko convert to Islam, yeah? I don't know why he's converted to Islam. He's gay.
Assalamu alaikum. Let's not waste any time. The last time my guest Mohammed Hijab was on the show.
This is Mohammed Hijab.
It was during a wave of attacks on Islam led by Patrick Bin David and crew.
I was almost under Sharia law.
Relative.
That's our guy, like, Mohammed. Go ahead.
Was he a virgin, Tom?
If you're a Muslim, you can say, yes, we're winning, we're taking over.
Well, they're back at it again, doubling down with the same old tired claims. Today, we're going to break it all down. We'll watch some of the clips, respond with facts, context, and clarity. And then you could be the judge. Let's get right into it. Let me introduce you to my faith. We have one God, His name's Allah, Allah. And His final messenger's Muhammad, peace be upon him. This is our religion, Islam, Islam. This is the Deen Show.
Girl, I love you very much. I love the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Years ago or 4 years ago and said, here's what's going to happen.
People call you racist. People call you Islamophobic. Where is the passion coming for you to want to go up and do something about this?
They're getting our young girls hooked on heroin and then they're prostituting them in paedophile gangs. The government know, the police know, religious leaders know. There's a conspiracy.
How is that possible?
They control the drugs, the violence in every town and city is controlled by the Muslim community in the UK now. They are the mafia. And this is what Americans really need to get ready for.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
How are you? We've been called many things, but I didn't know that we're the mafia now.
Yeah, no, it's what it is that when you've got someone who just says anything without any backing, do you know what I mean? Like he's making a sociological point without giving sociological evidence. Then you can make whatever point you want to make, you know. The Muslims are about 6% of the population in Britain. For him to make an argument that we're controlling Britain and the major cities and stuff like that, it's a very, very difficult argument to make. Especially here, like in the UK, we don't have guns, right? So if you consider the fact that like we cannot have militias, we cannot have what there is there in, for example, the United States of America, where there can actually be effective control, then it's a very preposterous claim to make, to be honest. It's almost unworthy of a response.
I mean, he's connecting you saying that the Muslim community is the mafia, going to get you hooked on heroin, prostitution, drugs. I mean, this is all these things is what Islam calls you away from. So how does he jump and make this connection? And then you have studies, independent studies that have been done that Muslims are the least likely to drink group. Religious group to drink alcohol, take drugs, commit violent crimes compared to the general population. If anybody does any research, this is what they're going to come up with. But how does he excludes every other group, every other religion, but he's got a microscope somehow and he starts connecting everything that we stay away from. He's connecting to Islam. The ironic thing is Patrick's a very intelligent man. And he's inviting someone like this on to go ahead and spew this this nonsense.
We'll get to the intelligence of Patrick or lack thereof, because I think that he's good in his field. Patrick David is a businessman. He's good in his field. He knows how to make money with the Ponzi scheme that he ran for many years, whatever it is that got him to where he's at. But whenever he speaks about any of the issues that are topical or pertinent, he always makes such significant blunders that, to be honest, I wouldn't give him any praise whatsoever. Like, we'll get to some of the things that he's been saying recently. But on this point, I think you're absolutely right. Like, you know, I mean, the funny thing is Tommy Robinson himself that upon multiple testimonials, multiple different reports and people, they all say that he's a junkie himself. He's the one who takes cocaine, and people say that he takes, you know, maybe heroin as well, and he's into prostitution. So all the things he's essentially projecting onto the Muslim community, all the thing he does himself, he's projecting it all onto the Muslim community. The Muslim community in Britain, you know, don't forget, like, you know, half of it is men, half of it is women, 50-50 about, you know, proportionally. Then you've got like a massive number of children in that community as well. So if you remove the women and children, then you're left with, I don't know, like 2 million, maybe even less than that, men, okay? And Britain's got a population of 77 million people. Like, he's exaggerating the effect of the Muslim community to try and scare his already failed demographic. They're failed in every sociological metric. People that follow Tommy Robinson are not, you know, bankers in the city. They're not people who are making lots of money and who are educated at the highest levels. There are usually people who are the lowest echelons of society, and they have very limited education, they have very limited knowledge, and they'll be fooled and duped by these kinds of things. And so he's able to, you know, peddle these kinds of things.
They're going to convert your youth. And when they convert your youth through the prison system or on the streets, they're going to turn them so quickly and so fast against America.
UK. Your response here, he's saying that they're going to convert your youth, and they're going to turn them against the country. They're going to turn them against America.
Yeah, I mean, once again, if you look at the numbers of people who've converted, or people that convert to Islam on a yearly basis, according to British attitude surveys, because there's different demographic metrics. There's a scholar called Linda Woodhead. She looks at some of those numbers herself. There's obviously the census data. And then there's something called British attitude surveys. When you put all three of those things together, like demographers and what they say, British attitude surveys, and the census, you'll realize that there's probably around 6,000 to 10,000 people converting to Islam on a yearly basis in Great Britain, in the UK. Now, that's hardly enough, you know, to change the demographic in any significant way. The reason why Muslims are really increasing, not just in the United Kingdom, but at the rapid rate that they've increased, because according to Pew, a recent study that was published recently, Pew Research, they said from the year 2010 to 2020 that there was an increase of about 350 million Muslims in the world. And the majority of the reason why that's the case is because of birth rates, because women, Muslim women, are having more children pound for pound than their Christian and atheist counterparts. So the demographic shift is not necessarily due to missionary work, as much as someone like myself would love to say that it is. The truth is, it's mostly to do with birth rates and the fact that the nuclear family for the dominant white population in Britain and other countries, actually more so in other countries like Germany and Italy, which has a markedly aging population in Europe, is nuclear family is not seen as a favorable option anymore. And, you know, people are not having families as much. That's not necessarily our fault. The fact that the majority population are not necessarily having the kids that they used to have, and they're not no longer competitive with their Muslim counterparts. That's just a shift in attitudes and cultures of the dominant populations. So the way it's been formulated is this kind of manipulative encroachment by the Muslim community. Well, the truth is, there's not much responsibility being taken for some of the things that are being mentioned by Robinson. For example, that the birth rates of the dominant populations is less than the Muslims, the fact that the nuclear family is not respected, that parents are not respected, that the culture doesn't respect parents, that Western culture doesn't even respect parents that much. These are things Islam come to uphold. And at the end of the day, we don't have any apology to make about that. And there's no point to be made about that either.
What we're seeing here in America, we're seeing tens of thousands of people accepting Islam. I mean, these are educated people. People now who are looking for purpose, and they're finding it in Islam. You have more women who are actually accepting Islam than men, and I'll give you an example, because many of these things he's mentioning are happening in the prisons. Here, The fact is that people are coming in. These are the say worst of society coming into prisons, and they're losing their humanity. They've lost their humanity, as many claim, but then they're finding their humanity in Islam. So the Muslim population in America is about 1%. But that's the right, prison right. population, I don't know how it is there, but in America, it's 10 to 15%. And in some states, 20%. And these people now are not, the independent studies, criminologists and others are, because the Islam hate industry is saying that Islam in the prisons is radicalizing people. But the studies show this is not happening. It's actually closing the revolving door, because most people, they go into prison, they get educated on how to become better criminals, and they come out, do more crime, and they go back in. But here's the point. Check this out, Muhammad Hijab, is that if Islam is radical, it's the most extreme religion, it's making people, as they're saying, become extremists. These are people who are the most evil of society. Now they're coming into the prisons, and you're giving them an extreme religion. That would form a disaster. What would that? They'd be coming out, and you'd have studies, and you'd see like what would be happening to society. But you actually see people implementing Islam, and now they're actually becoming better assets to society.
And that's an excellent point.
They're being confined to the four walls in the prison, and the majority of people in the prisons come from a Christian background and other religions. But now all the religions are put on the table, like they're actually getting a chance to be away from all the distractions, and they're looking into Islam and making an intelligent decision, and they're choosing Islam, and they're finding their humanity.
As you mentioned, like, prisons are a very powerful place to actually deeply reflect, you know. There's less distractions and stuff. And if people are becoming Muslims in places where there's less distraction, then that's actually a testament to the power of the message of Islam, when it's not tainted by outside forces or people or institutions or media. That's one thing. The other thing I would say is, I think you're absolutely right, and you hit the nail on the head when you mention that, okay, you know, these people are coming into prison as non-Muslims, a lot of them converting in the UK, in the US, and other places. But then when they come out, the question is there more belligerence and transgression of the law, for example, being shown, or is it less? Now, there is no data that indicates that they become more criminal in their behavior. In fact, if someone wants to make that case, they'd have to make a sociological study. They'd have to get people that come out of prison that have switched religions and show that there has been not just, you know, reoccurrence of the same criminal behavior, but an exacerbation of the same criminal behavior. I hypothesize, however, although I know that there's no formal study that has been done in the West on this just yet, that the opposite is true, that people who embrace a religion as Islam, which encourages religious discipline, more so arguably than any other religion in the world, are less likely, by virtue of that very fact, to commit crimes and things which are considered reprehensible in the religion of Islam. Like you mentioned in the beginning of the show, addiction, prostitution, fornication, adultery, and all these other things. And they are more likely to leave those things off and to have a disciplined religious existence. But once again, it's just claims and assertions that are made without any evidence whatsoever. And this is why you can't really debate with people that are ignorant at that level. Because what I find more disturbing, quite frankly, Eddie, is that these people have an audience. It's very disturbing that we are living in the West, in the age of information, in the age of education, where it's so easy to get a degree now. You can get one online. It's so easy to get a book now. You know, 100 years ago, it would have been very difficult to have even a tenth or even 1% of the access that we have now to books. You know, on your phone, you can basically download any book you want. You know, this is how the world has become. Before, you'd have to travel nations just to get your hands on a manuscript to read books. We're living in the age of information. We've even got ChatGPT right now. I mean, people can fact check things using myriad methods. Yet, notwithstanding all of those points, people can come on a mainstream platform with hundreds of thousands of spectators and viewers and make claims with which have no evidence whatsoever, but which focuses on an exclusionary narrative. Because the right wing or the far right, it's the narrative is an exclusionary narrative. They derive their self-worth from their opposition towards things that are not them. And that's not good for us, because the number one thing they like nowadays is Muslims. So they derive their self-worth by defining themselves against Islam and Muslims. That is the project of the far right. Because remember, they have no self-worth. They're the least educated in society. They're the least, you know, in terms of money, they have the least money in society. And so on and so forth. And so they need to get their self-worth from somewhere. So it can't be done through their accolades. It cannot be done through their what they've achieved. So it has to be done through exclusionary narratives. And so no one's going to fact check anything that these people say, because they need it to exist. They have a psychological dependency of these narratives, these myths that they've created about Islam and Muslims, these fictions, these useful fictions that they've created about Islam and Muslims. They need it.
Cowardice, because Islam has failed. The Sikhs haven't failed. The Jews haven't failed. The Hindus haven't failed. In fact, no other communities have failed to integrate and assimilate into Great Britain. It's worked. And my hometown, and I can only speak by experience, is a perfect example of that.
I like to translate the word when you use Muslim or Islam. So he's saying that submission, technically, because if you translate Islam, it would be like, okay, Islam has failed. Submission to the will of the creator, not the creation, has failed. So all these other man-made religions, they're okay. They've done humanity right. But can you go into this? I mean, how do you respond?
Yeah, because what it is very unusual, because this is like the fallacy of equivocation, right? They use the word Islam to denote Muslims. Okay, so when he's talking about Islam has failed, what he actually, because maybe he's illiterate or he hasn't completed his English, you know, qualifications when he was growing up as a boy, you know. But the problem is he's using the word Islam to denote a group of people. Islam is a religion. It's an abstract noun, you know. So here, Islam is, as you mentioned very correctly, you know, submission to the will of the creator. There's to say, to postulate then that, oh, Islam has failed, the proposition would become unintelligible. In what sense has it failed? Or what do you mean has it failed? Islam is not trying to succeed in that sense. Islam is not trying to fail or succeed. Islam is a set of propositions about the origin of existence and the purpose of life and the eschaton. That's what Islam is and how to live your life. So it's not something which is susceptible to failure or success. Muslims, on the other hand, if he's saying that Muslims have failed to integrate, if that's what he means by that, and then he juxtaposes Muslims with other faith groups, for example, Jews and Sikhs. Well, actually, I disagree with this proposition wholly, because in the United Kingdom, I would actually make an argument that Muslim groups are much more intermixed with mainstream societies than Orthodox Jewish ones. I mean, all someone has to do is just go to London and take a look at Golders Green and Stamford Hill and these areas, where there are literally rows of just, you know, synagogues and Haredi Jews and so on walking around, no one with them, in the most secluded manner possible. And they would, you know, be very brazen about this, that they have nothing. I'm not saying it's bad either. They can do what they want, but I'm just saying, even that as a sociological realization is false. It's not the case that Muslims have any special type of disintegration vis-a-vis, for example, Jews. You could say the same thing about Sikhs, actually. If you go to some areas in London, you'll find Sikhs conglomerate around certain areas, like Southall, for example, and that they have very interknitted communities. So it's just the nature of society that sometimes communities gather, and sometimes it's upon religious lines and sometimes on ethnic and racial lines. Like if you go to America, if you go to Philadelphia, which is not far away from where maybe where you are right now, it's you'll find once again, you know, a lot of black people there, African Americans and so on. And Detroit, lots of African Americans. And then if you go to some of the, you know, other states, you'll find hillbillies and rednecks, the like of which Patrick Bet-David and Tommy Robinson are trying to appeal to. You know, so it's just a fact that people are homogamous innate. That people like to conglomerate around their own kind, whether that is religious or whether that's ethnic. And there's nothing extraordinary about the Muslim experience when you consider that. So they're saying, well, Islam has failed, meaning it's failed to integrate. Or what kind of integration or assimilation do you propose for the Muslim people in general? So it's not, we need to have a conversation about where our limits are, what our boundaries are, and these kinds of things. But the point is even this, it's like a 15-year-old scrambling around to write a half-decent essay. Because wallahi, if this was something that was handed in by a 14-year-old, if this was an essay, an argumentative piece that was handed in by a 14-year-old in a sociology class in GCSEs or SATs or whatever it is, it would get a D grade. Yet, despite it being so weak, it's being watched by so many, which shows you the emotional attachment people have to these exclusionary narratives and right-wing religion, far-right religion, mythologies and useful fictions that have become so popular now among failures all over Western societies.
Yeah, when you these are the things that come to my head, because they're trying to push out everything evil in society and program people that Islam is connected to this. When I think about the goals of Islam, the main goal obviously is to take people away from creation worship to worship the Creator alone. A family, yeah. Purpose of life, spirituality.
Absolutely.
Gratitude, thankfulness, no lying, stealing, drugs, alcohol, porn, no sex outside of marriage. And then the five wisdoms, maybe you can elaborate on this, of the God's law, you know, the safeguarding your intellect, your religion, if you want to expound on that, because all these things.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's Islam's purpose of life is for you to worship one God without any associate. The main difference between Islam and Christianity is that Christianity suggests that you have a man who is 100% man and 100% God at the same time, which fulfills all of the conditions of a contradiction. We say that instead of this, we believe in the Creator of the heavens and the earth, God Almighty, the most powerful, the most merciful, the most gracious, the all-knowledgeable. He's endowed human beings with purpose to submit to His will and to follow the prophets, Abraham, Moses, Jesus Christ, and Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This is Islam, you know. And it's not something foreign. If someone is familiar with the Bible, then a lot of the protagonists of the Bible, like Abraham and Moses and Jesus, are the same protagonists that we have. They talk about Islam as if it's a foreign entity, not realizing that they themselves have imported a Middle Eastern religion and made it the dominant one in the West. Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion. Just like Islam started in the Middle East, there's as much foreign import of Islam as there is of Christianity. If people in the West are comfortable taking one Middle Eastern religion, then they should be open, at least, to thinking about the other. That's the first point I'll make. The second point I wanted to make is, going back to the sociological argument, a place in the world wherein which there is not that many Muslims comparative to the dominant population is Latin America. In fact, that is a place where there are way more Christians proportionately. Yet, if you look at Colombia, if you look at Mexico, if you look at all these countries, there is no shadow of a doubt that all of the things that Mr. Robinson, or actually Laxley Lennon, which is his actual name, he had to change his name, that in this individual, because it's an Irish name and he wants to try and portray an English personality, that this all the things that he mentioned, drugs, alcohol, criminality, kidnapping and stuff, there probably is no other place in the world more than Latin America where these things are manifested, where there are cartels, where there are essentially, you know, governments and cartels are working hand in hand in these countries. And you can't blame Islam for these things or Muslim communities, because there is a very small Muslim population in those places. So stop trying to blame Islam for every single negative thing. It's actually preposterous. They blame Islam for the fact that some countries are poor. They say, look at the Muslim countries, they're poor. Forgetting about Latin America, forgetting about sub-Saharan Africa, where you have essentially Christian majority countries that are essentially the poorest countries in the world, GDP per capita. If Christianity was meant to be the solution to all of our problems, and this case was somehow to be made, then how comes we find in majority Christian countries the worst of the things that you are trying to associate with Islam? With that, to be honest, the sociological case against Islam fails. It fails completely. You can no longer blame Muslims. If we now look at other places in the world which have the same issues but different variables, then you can no longer have a causative relationship that's attributable to Islam. And that's something that these ignoramuses have not thought about properly. And I was surprised even my conversation with Jordan Peterson, it's as if he hasn't thought about that either.
What do you think, people, if you made the argument that these cartels, that they're actually representatives of Christianity? Because I don't know if you've seen that video where you have the graveyard of the cartel members and they have these big monumental like houses put up and they have crosses. And then many cartels are actually practicing Christians. They have the cross around their necks. And if you tell
we're not attributing that to Christianity,
but if you wanted to say, look, these are your Christians, right? We know better.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there's no more grooming that's happening more than Latin America. Let's just call a spade a spade. You're talking about grooming gangs in Britain. Let's let all the Muslim British grooming gangs pale in comparison to what is happening in Colombia in terms of prostitution, or what's happening in Poland, or what's happening in Russia, Christian majority nations. Let's not play games. Let's not make people laugh at us. This argument is a failed argument. It's a weak argument. It's a non-argument. You know, no one is making, no one has made from the far right, or attempted to make, or realized that they could make, or one could make, an argument linking Christianity to prostitution in those countries. Prostitution, human trafficking, slavery, kidnapping, drugs. I mean, to be honest, there is a stronger argument to be made. I'm not saying this is the argument, but if someone could easily link that with Christianity and say, well, Christianity doesn't, some versions of Christianity, some interpretations of Pauline Christianity, they say you don't actually need to follow the law, which means you don't need to follow the Torah laws. You don't need to follow the fact that, you know, you don't eat pork and these kind of things. You don't need to follow it because Jesus died for your sins. And so you can easily make much easier to make an argument that Christianity is linked to those social ills because there is no moral inhibition, there is no moral restriction by Christianity that's as strong as Islam. Compare, for example, pound for pound, the Middle Eastern nations with Latin American nations on certain metrics. For example, if you want to call it prostitution, there's no comparison. Call it promiscuity, there's no comparison. The average woman in the United Kingdom has had sex with 9 people before she reaches the age of 30, according to a super drug study. Compare that with the average of a woman in Egypt or Pakistan or some other Muslim country. There is no comparison. Okay, so the things that you guys in the far right espousing traditional values are complaining about when it comes to the Muslim world, actually, when you compare that with the non-Muslim world and the prevalence of AIDS and HIV, then there is no comparison. But these are the metrics and the parameters they don't want us to think about. They want us to think about the reason. They want us to think about, you know, the fact that Muslim countries are poor. Some Muslim countries have got less GDP than their non-Muslim equivalent because of the colonial legacy, because they stole the money from it anyway, because they stole the money from those. You robbed me and tell me, ask me why I don't have any possessions. It's the most embarrassing and pathetic thing. You have European powers going into essentially almost every single country in the Muslim world, robbing it of its resources, and then two generations later asking it why you have no possessions. It's unbelievable. And then they attribute it, to add insult into injury, they attribute you being robbed by them to your religion. It's actually a preposterous set of realities. And it's unbelievable that these redneck hillbillies and these chavs and these ignoramuses and these Tommy Robinson fans and these atheists and these individuals are actually falling for this level of argumentation in order to justify for themselves why they are failures, why they are addicts to pornography, why they are addicts to the booze, to the drugs. To weed, to cocaine. Like Tommy Robinson has been reported to be an addict to cocaine, to prostitutes, from one place to another. Yeah, this is Tommy Robinson. This is maybe Patrick Bet-David. You know, why doesn't he speak to him about these things? Patrick Bet-David should say, why every time we see a protest with you guys in England, we see these yobs, we call them yobs and chavs, walking around urinating in the street. You know, trying to hit. In 2018, you can pull this up. We went to a protest, me and Ali with them. 30 people surrounded us and tried to punch us and beat us and hurt us. 30. I was being punched from the back. I was being punched from the front. I was being punched from the right. I was being punched by the left. And I still stayed standing, you know. You know, it took 30 of them. But I have to say, I did have the help of the police. The Metropolitan Police, and if it wasn't for the Metropolitan Police, it would have been a problem. Nevertheless, you're talking about violence as if it's exclusive property of the Muslim people. When I went, I was attacked by 30 of these guys. They are hooligans, they are thugs, you know. And at the end of the day, British society, by the way, knows this. If you ask the average Britisher, they know that Tommy Robinson is an extremist. He's their version of an extremist. People know this. You know, people should not have the impression of British people that they're all racist.
Is that why they're trying to export him now to the U.S.? Because now the U.S. hasn't caught on to his what he really is about?
Yeah, the U.S. doesn't know who he is, right? He's only relevant kind of in the U.K. And if you go and ask anybody here, like if I go in the streets in London and I ask 10 white people about Tommy Robinson, if they have a favorable or disfavorable view, you'll be lucky to get one out of those 10 that have a favorable view of those guys. But that one out of 10 that have a favorable view of Tommy Robinson are the ones that you hear online, are the ones that you see commenting. But they are not representative of British society.
We took them on. They were allowed. You know the scenes of Abu Hamza with the hook in Finsbury Park where hundreds of Muslims are in the streets and he's calling for war and calling for jihad? No one was stopping him.
Mohammed Hijab?
No, not Mohammed Hijab. Abu Hamza with the hook. He's a terrorist with a hook. But back when this was going on...
Why do you think when Stephen Lexon, when he's bringing up and he's describing somebody with a hook, why do you think Patrick, he went on automatic mode and he just brought you up out of all people?
He's got me in his mind. He's got me in his mind. I think the refutations that we do together... and that we're going to continue doing about Patrick Bet-David. And they're going to get worse for him. Because we've given him a chance. We've spoken to him privately. We've been very respectful to him. But he's continually perpetuating stereotypes, generalizations, and misinformation about Islam and Muslim people. Recently, I saw a clip of his on Twitter where he was making these absurd and humiliating claims with such confidence. And if we can pull that video up, can we pull that video up of him saying what he said? And then I'll come back and respond in kind. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable what he said. Let's take a look at what he said.
The person who was born in Iran, yes, I can't stand this regime. Yes, they've caught, the only thing that's been persistent and consistent is the following. When the Shah was in Iran, did Israel already exist?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
Was Israel causing chaos? Was there war in the Middle East?
Let me say this one more time. When Iran was ran by the Shah, what year was the Shah of Iran? What years did he run Iran?
The 53 through 79, I think.
Okay, 53 is the oil consortium, so 54 is the oil consortium.
41
to 79.
Oh, wow.
Because he started at 21 years old, young man, right? Mm. 41 to 79. When did Israel become a nation?
48.
Yeah, okay, so check this out. Why is it that between 48 to 79, while the Shah was the king of Iran, running Iran, why is it for 31 years there is no major war in the Middle East? Why is that? So to the people that want to say it's all Israel's fault, how come there wasn't that in Iran for 31 years? I'm curious. Answer that question for me. And why is it from 79, when the mullahs, the Hezbollahs, the IRGC, all these guys, the Khomeinis, all of them took over, why has there been chaos in the Middle East since 79? Whose fault is that? America's been consistent. Yes, I know America wanted the oil from Iran. And yes, I know UK wanted it and MI6 and CIA and all this stuff. And yes, I also am aware that the Shah didn't trust Israel. The Shah didn't trust, you know, what they were doing with media and finance and the ambition and the level and the control and the influence and all that stuff. He knew what was going on there. He wanted to compete with them. He didn't see himself as a victim. He's like, we're going to be doing the same thing. And they're like, wait a minute, this guy's too ambitious and he thinks he can go up against all of us. Let's take this guy out. We need chaos in the Middle East. Oh, shit. Even Israel being involved, let's just say for Iran and the Shah falling, there is chaos now in the Middle East. On who, though? On who, though? Who did that? So, yeah, for me, the most consistent thing behind the chaos in the Middle East has been Iran. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, so I just want to say, because he said, someone answer that question for me. I'm going to answer that question directly, and I think this is a humiliating and embarrassing blunder of tremendous proportions, the like of which Mr. Bette David should come out and apologize and retract and rescind his comment. Because he said, what major war was there between 1941 and 1979 in the Middle East, not realizing that the most major wars were the, in that exact time period, the 1948 war, in the among the inceptions, upon the inception of Israel itself, was a war between Israel and countries, Arab countries surrounding it. In 1956, there was the Suez Canal crisis. In 1966-67, there was the Six-Day War. In 1973, there was the Yom Kippur War. So this guy is so academically and historically illiterate that he actually chose the time where there was probably the most wars, and he's challenging us to give him, you know, the reason why there was no war, no war in this period of time. You are, I know you're watching this, Bette David, because you watch us, you love watching our content. I'm sorry to say, you are academically illiterate. You are completely uneducated on these matters. You should not speak about history. You should not speak about politics. You should not speak about religion. And what happens is, when you, as an ignoramus, with all due respect, bring on another ignoramus, another ignorant person, then what you have as a result, when you have Tommy Robinson there, is compounded ignorance. You're saying ignorant things, he's saying ignorant things. There's no academic to check you, there's nobody to check you, because you always surround yourself with ultra crepidarians, with obsequious individuals, with ignorant individuals, with ignoble individuals, with individuals with agendas, with individuals with no formal education. At least when Joe Rogan does his podcasts, which your podcast will never reach his podcast level, is he brings specialists. He brings people that he can ask questions, scientists. He brings, you know, people that are actually specialists in areas, and they can give him the cutting edge research. And he stays there quietly whilst they give him the information. Whereas you, on your own show, come and speak about these matters as if you are some kind of an authority. And in fact, you're making such huge blunders that it beggars belief that there is such ignorance in your studio that not one person from the editorial team, from the panel, or from the comments, or from anybody could correct you on one of the most glaring and obvious, painfully obvious mistakes of a historical kind that anybody can make about your own nation. About your own nation, which is you're from Iran, and its surrounding countries. You should be ashamed of yourself. You need to stop talking and start listening. You should start reading, because having money, and I want to make this very clear, there's lots of people nowadays become businessmen and get money from Ponzi schemes or whatever it may be. I don't know how you made your money, Patrick, and I don't care. Having money and having knowledge are two separate things. Having money doesn't mean that you have intelligence and knowledge. You cannot buy intelligence. You can buy books, you can buy courses, but you cannot buy intelligence. You should know your limits. You should know that you've spent your time raising money or doing this or doing that or, you know, doing business. Don't get involved in academic discussions. It will save you the humiliation of someone like me in London, who I'm meant to be this ruffian, this uncouth in London, that Tommy Robinson, he's describing the Muslim community. And he's trying to paint us out in this way to you. I'm meant to be like that, but I'm checking you in such a way that not even your most ardent supporters can defend you, because you are wrong. You are making a case that Israel is not the most, you know, damaging and destructive and belligerent and transgressive actor in the Middle East by trying to find a time pre-Iranian Revolution in 79 whereby there was not these things that you're mentioning, but there was all of those things that you're mentioning. This is such an embarrassment. If I were you, I would be able to sleep from the embarrassment. I would not be able to sleep. I would look at myself in the mirror and just turn away. Wallahi, I would. It's so embarrassing. If I could somehow, using the millions that I have, if I were you, I don't have millions myself, but if I were you, you know, remove those videos where I'm talking rubbish and bringing ignoramuses, I would do it, because to spare myself the humiliation, the intellectual and academic humiliation of this. This is what happens when you have an agenda and you're a Shah supporter above everything else, and you're a nationalist before everything else, and so on and so forth. And you want to make a case, but you can't even make it because your brain cells can't aid you and help you. Patrick, but David, come out and apologize. Come out and retract. Come out and rescind. Come out and correct. Come out and clarify. You should now say, I have a new policy on my show. My policy is I'm going to have at least one academic. When we speak about sensitive issues, when we speak about big issues, I'm going to have at least, you don't have to have a Muslim academic when you're talking about Islam. You can have a non-Muslim academic of Islam. Bring the standards of your little crummy show up. Bring the standards of your show up. Do you understand me? Bring it up. You are contributing to the proliferation of ignorance in your country. You are contributing to ignoramuses and chavs and hillbillies and rednecks not knowing where countries are on the map and this, that, and the other, and historical timelines having it all messed up. You are contributing to global ignorance. It's not about Islam or ideology or narrative. It's about academic credibility. You're missing that. You're lacking that. I would say, based on just that clip here, you should retire. You should say, I'm taking some time off a PBD podcast, this and that. I'm just going to do business. There's going to be a new guy that's going to be running this show. And they have you or me doing it. Because they need some professionals. They need some professionals, for God's sake. You know, we'll take the show, PBD show, to another level. We'll do something good with it. He has this ignoramus with him all the time called Adam. What has he done? What has he done? These guys, I'm going to put it because people don't know. Eddie is a high-level black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. People don't know this. I remember going to Chicago a long time ago and he was showing me some things. I was thinking, my God, this guy is not what he seems. But let me put it in BJJ terms. These guys are not even white belts. Forget about it. They haven't even put on the gi. These guys are the most low level. Okay, you're bringing people, and then they're speaking as if they're like, you know, Roger Gracie or Gordon Ryan. You're nothing. You honestly have done, you're not proven. Stop speaking about these matters. You're nothing, yeah? Understand you're nothing. Humble yourself. Humble yourself.
Humble yourself. It's time to humble yourself. That's it. You know, and this is the problem. Forget about narrative and this, that, and that. They need to humble themselves. That's what it comes down to. Because when you don't humble yourself, we're going to catch you as we have. We're going to catch you on your mistakes. And we're going to expose your mistakes. And your supporters will say, they'll tip your hat. They'll tip their hat to us. They'll tip their hat. And they'll say, yes, he's right. They'll say, even though we disagree with him on ideology, he's right. You're ignorant. You should not be representing our interests. That's what they're going to say.
Are they good for the economy? A Pew Research 2021 report says that 41% of Muslims ages 16 to 64 are economically inactive, compared to 24.7% of overall population. Inactive. They don't work. They don't contribute to society. They're out. 59% does. So, but what, there has to be something where one says, that's why they allow them to do whatever they want to do and they can get away with everything. What is the motivation? How are they winning?
Well, we can. Okay. So how would you respond to this?
Yeah, as we mentioned, economic arguments, okay? If they want to make economic arguments against Islam, somehow attributing Islam, if you're attributing Islam to the fact that there are people in Britain who are Muslims who claim benefits, government benefits, or that there are some people in America who are economically inactive and happen to be Muslim, or that there are some people in France who happen to be this and that, or Belgium, or any other country. This is the argument you want to make. Then you first have to show why there's a causal relationship between Islam and economic inactivity, as you mentioned. That's the first. Second thing is, you then have to explain why is it that you have so many Christian majority countries which are among, if not the poorest countries in the world by GDP per capita. For example, Zimbabwe is a majority Christian country. Congo is a majority Christian country. These countries are not rich countries. Compare Congo with the UAE, for example, or Qatar per capita. There's no comparison. You say, well, that's not a fair comparison, is it? Oh, look at these guys have oil and these guys don't have oil. And these guys have this and this guy. You always change the goalposts. Okay, no problem. Compare it with Malaysia. Compare it with Brunei. It's not oil wealth there. At the end of the day, the point you're making is not consistent. If it were true that Islam somehow made you more poor and somehow more weak, then how could it be the case that 95% of the time the Muslims have been around 1,450 years almost, that for 95% of the time, they have either been the superpower or one of the superpowers? What about the Ottoman Empire? What about the Mali Empire? What about the Abbasids? What about the Umayyads? What about Muslim Spain? What about all of these different places and all of these different times? Well, they'll say, okay, that was then, and this is now, and this, that, and the other. Look, as I mentioned, this argument of economics is a redundant and refuted and debunked argument. It's a redundant and refuted and debunked argument. The premise and the assumption of the argument is false, and the conclusions of the argument are false. You cannot get a more false argument than this argument. The assumption of the argument is that the richer you are, the righter you are. The more money you have, the more right you are and when it comes to religion and ideology. And that's a false assumption. You can be rich and wrong, as with Patrick Bet-David. We just saw his comment where he's making blunders and humiliation. He's humiliating himself and he's making blunders about this, that, and the other. So you can be rich and wrong at the same time. Okay, so that's the assumption. The conclusions are also wrong because they are trying to say that being Muslim makes you more poor. Somehow forgetting the GDP per capita, the HDI, the Human Development Index, and or any other economic indicator that they want to put onto Haiti, for example, or Colombia, or Mexico, or sub-Saharan Africa, all of these, come on. Don't waste my time with arguments like this. Don't waste the Muslim people's time with arguments like this. This is why, if I was in front of Patrick Bet-David, or Tommy, or anybody else, this is how it should be said. Don't waste our time with false arguments like this.
instead of going to the crux of the matter. If you want to talk about Islam and Christianity, we talk about Tawheed. We talk about one God. We talk about what makes more sense, believing in one God or believing in three in one and one in three. Believing in a God that's not a man or believing in a God that's 100% man, 100% God. What makes more sense, the Quran or the Bible? This is the crux. If you're looking for the truth, you go to these questions. You don't start making stupid arguments that don't make any sense, don't cohere. Only in the minds of foolish and ignorant people do they cohere. But these are incoherent arguments and arguments made by ignoble and agenda-driven people. This is what I would say. And this is what must be said. And this is the thing that has to be in the minds of all the Muslim people. The Quran even tells us. It gives us an answer to why is it the case that you find that sometimes Muslims will be victorious, sometimes they'll be on the upper hand, and sometimes they will not be. It says, وَتِلْكَ الْأَيَّامُ دَوِّلُهَا بَيْنَ النَّاسِ. These are the days that we alternate between the people so that Allah knows who believes in Him, and so He can take with them shuhada and so on and so forth. This, by the way, there's hikam, wisdoms, as to why Allah makes us rich sometimes and makes us poor sometimes, makes us win sometimes and makes us lose sometimes. The wisdom is to test us to see if we're going to be faithful to Islam, faithful to Allah, faithful to the religion, whether or not we are winning. This is the reason why Allah does it. Sometimes we win, like Badr. And sometimes we look like lose like Uhud. This is the situation. And the true Muslims, as Allah says, حَسِبَ النَّاسِ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا وَهُمْ لَا يَفْتَنُونَ. In Surah Al-Ankabut, Alif Lam Mim, that do the people think, حَسِبَ النَّاسِ أَن يُتْرَكُوا, that they'll be left, أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا, that we say we believe, وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ, and they will not be trialed. وَلَقَدْ فَتَنَّ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ. We have trialed those who come before you. فَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ الْكَاذِبِينَ. So Allah will know who are the believers, the true believers, the ones who are true to their word, true to the faith. And Allah will know the liars. This is the reason. Allah tells us the reason. Some people, even Muslims, they will look and say, well, Palestine, you know, and Hamas and this and that and whatever they want to say. I'm saying, look, with whatever situation you want to bring, there's always going to be ups and downs. Ups and downs. And throughout history, it's been like that. Yeah? So I'm sorry to say, this is no argument that Islam is false. The victory, the ultimate victory will be to the Muslims in this dunya and in the akhirah and the hereafter. And it's only a matter of time. But in the meantime, the argument to be had is whether or not our religion is true, your religion is true. It's not, oh, you've got more money than me, I must be true, I must be right. This is pathetic.
Money.
Oh, no, this is a mafia as well. The Islamic community is a mafia, total mafia.
So do they have the judges and the cops and all those guys bought? Well, because they're paying them off?
What's coming? If everyone in Britain knew what's coming, if they knew what Islam's going to do, if they knew the attack on freedom, if we knew the true agenda of those in control of us and what they want for us, there'd be a revolution tomorrow. But they don't know because they're lied to, they're controlled continuously, which is why the biggest thing we have is free speech. But that's why
you don't have free speech.
That's why they attack
you. You don't have free.
Some of these things you already answered, but same thing. We're going to get through some of these, or a few more clips there. What do you want to comment about this? If people only knew, and when this Islam comes, if they only knew the agenda behind Islam, there'd be a revolution.
Yeah, I mean, these are just words and catchphrases.
Another stupid argument, yeah.
They're not good at anything in terms of academics. I have to tell you this. Yeah, as we've just mentioned, they're uneducated. We fact-checked them on almost every single point, sociologically and historically. But one thing that Tommy Robinson is good at, there's only one thing that he's good at, which is he can emotively engage his low IQ audience. He knows what to say to them to make them angry. That's what he can do, yeah? So he's got people that are disenfranchised in England. He's got people that are, you know, the equivalent of hillbillies in England. They have no money. They're going to the government for, you know, benefits and stuff. They're, you know, they're finding it really difficult to get by. They haven't got these kinds of, this class of people, okay? And he knows that they don't want to recognize the fact that that's because of their own doing. They didn't concentrate in school. They didn't do these things that they had to do. That's why they're in the situation they're in. So instead, he's giving them someone to blame. And the people, the scapegoat that we have here is the Muslim community. He's using the Muslim community as a convenient scapegoat to explain to working class, disenfranchised young English men why they are failures. It gives them some kind of respite. It gives them a reason. So he knows how to emotionally engage them and make them angry. Oh, they're doing this to our women, then this and that, there'll be a revolution and these kinds of things. And they'll fall for it. And instead of that, if they had just taken some individual responsibility for why they are failures, why they have not achieved anything in their life, then they can respond to Robinson. And that's why, as I mentioned before, and I'll say this again, you will not find your average banker, your average Oxbridge graduate, your average person that's working, you know, and you know, has got excellent job in the city, whatever it may be. You'll not find that that's the person who follows Tommy Robinson. You'll find that the person who follows Tommy Robinson is some kind of a football hooligan who urinates in the street, who hasn't got any formal qualifications, who doesn't know how to even speak his own mother tongue, and who needs someone to blame. And Tommy Robinson is fulfilling, he is fulfilling that need for them. He's providing something. He's giving the market the demand it needs in terms of psychological fulfillment for those disenfranchised men.
With Mohammed Hijab and quite a few of his crew out there in the streets.
Hunting down Jews.
Yeah, so this
they don't is... They didn't get arrested.
So, but why... Can you play this clip, Rob? This is where?
It's in London. Look up.
It was...
The thing is, they just don't get arrested.
No, why, though?
Because of the two-tier policing, so people understand.
What's the context here? They're saying that you're hunting down Jews.
Yeah, I mean, I never mentioned that myself. That was someone else. They put some other person's voice. So that's not even, I don't even think they're claiming that I said that. So when they say he's not being arrested, what is it that's a criminal offense that I did? You know, if you look at those footage, those clips in that video that we just done, in what is there a criminal offense that I need to be arrested for? Or they don't get arrested because there's two-tier policing. Tommy Robinson, now you saw when my name was mentioned for the second time in the show, because this is the second time they mentioned my name. Tommy Robinson decided to kind of smile in kind of like discomfort. You would have noticed that he was very uncomfortable with my name. And the reason why is because he's very afraid of me. He's petrified. He's trembling on so many different levels. In fact, we have just confirmed one of his close friends. Her name was Lucy. She defected and she, you know, admitted this to us. She said, you know, this guy was always petrified of you. He's always scared. Whenever your name would come up, he would become very scared. And the reason why he's very scared is not because I'll
so Lu-
hurt
Lucy,
him.
This is a very important point. She was part of the EDL?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. Was Lucy part of the EDL?
She was the Christian lady.
He was the rebel media. Lucy and
Caleb
were
part of it. She was like his right hand, one of the right hands of Tommy.
Like right hand man.
Not right.
Ezra.
Right hand woman.
Yeah, she was there. So
very
it's like
close right-hand. Knit with this community.
Exactly. And she admitted that lots of the things, like, for example, he tries to bring forward this kind of like, you know, macho man personality. Okay. Now, we do the same thing, but the difference between the two is that at least one of us can back it up. I mean, these ones here, apparently they staged like false assaults and stuff like that. Kaylin was telling us, right? There was like an African migrant. There's a video of him punching an African migrant. And the African migrant, it was edited to make it look like he was aggressive and he wasn't aggressive. So this is what the kind of thing they told us after they defected, that they try and create, manufacture this image, which isn't authentic for them, you know, this macho man image. Remember, he doesn't have any academic qualifications, so he needs something to make himself, to give himself worth, to prop himself up. So he tries to bring maybe the physical aspect, maybe if he can portray himself as somewhat rough and ready, somewhat of a macho man, then someone can, you know, buy his propaganda and start following him. The truth of the matter is that, according to their testimonies, when they defected from him, that this man is a very insecure man, very scared man,
He was trembling in fear every time my name was mentioned. And the reason why is because it's not to do with the physicality. It's not even a question of that. But it's more to do with he knows and he's been advised very, very carefully. Do not engage Muhammad Hijab. He's been advised. Because if you engage him, he's going to make you look like a bit of an idiot. He's going to fact check every single thing you say. He's going to, you know, cross-reference this. He's going to mention that. He's going to... Don't go near this guy. In fact, my good friend Ali Dawa, who's next to me right now, he was even advised not to encounter him, to the point where Ali Dawa had to try and chase him. And he was trying to chase him for many, many months to catch him. Somebody who's portraying themselves to be this bastion of free speech and dialogue and debate was running away from engagement for months and had to be caught. So some things here that need to be verified before, because obviously I've got a court case with this guy. People don't know that I've got a court case with Tommy Robinson. Yeah, I'm taking Tommy Robinson to court. He's been served the legal papers. And
that's
guess
coming
who
up in
came
one
up?
Of the clips. Yeah, that he's going to mention that in one of the clips.
And I've taken him to court. And guess who's funding it?
Who?
Elon Musk.
Wait, what?
Elon Musk came out publicly and said, I am funding Tommy Robinson against for his court cases. And his court cases are against me.
Elon Musk is funding...
Yeah, he didn't mention my name, Elon Musk. But nevertheless, he's funding Tommy Robinson directly, you know, in the court cases. Now, I don't collect money from the public for my court cases. You know, I've had to pay thousands and thousands of pounds for my personal funds. In these court cases, thousands and tens of thousands of sterling pounds. But I consider that to be my own sadaqah, jariyah, for the sake of Allah. And alhamdulillah, it's doing very well. I'm taking all of these people to court because I'm trying to engage these individuals in all the legal ways possible. And this is why they start to realize that we're a credible legal threat to them. That they can't just bully us. They can't just throw us on this and that. They cannot do these things. They can no longer besmirch us. They can no longer try and attack us. That there will be a response. There will be a legal response. There will be an intellectual response. There will be a media response. And that's what we're seeing. And that's why these people are very scared and very, you know, hesitant to mention our names and so on and so forth.
Tell me this before we go to the next clip. Does your religion teach you to hate Jews? Do you hate the Jewish people?
Absolutely not. I mean, this is one of
because that's what
that
clip
people...
is trying to make. That's what they're trying to insinuate. Yeah, here.
I mean, look, I mean, this is, you know, they were talking about Islamophobia and they said, like, you know, as if there should not be such a thing as Islamophobia and it's blocking and inhibiting free speech and so on. But they weren't saying the same thing about anti-Semitism, right? So for them, discrimination against Muslims is okay, but discrimination against Jews is not okay. And that's because they're card-carrying Zionists. And nowadays, people have had enough, and they can see with what is Zionism. They can see the agenda of Zionism. Okay, so when they talk about Jews and that Muslims hate Jews, the Prophet Muhammad himself married a Jew. Safiya bint Huyay was an ethnic Jew. So if it was the case that we were meant to hate Jews, then why is it that the Prophet is marrying a Jew? And not just that, when she was complaining that some of the other female companions, were saying some things relating to her lineage and the fact that she was her Jewishness, her ethnic Jewishness, he gave her something to respond to them, which is to glorify that lineage by connecting it to Aaron and Moses, or Aaron in particular, in fact. So the point is if there was something that we found inherently problematic about being a Jew, then it would make no sense for A, the Prophet to marry an ethnic Jew, and then B, for him to arm her with the intellectual arguments that will be required to defend her lineage, her Jewish lineage. So this is something which, look, the Quran itself has favorable things to say about Jewish people. It has unfavorable things to say about the clergy. Like, for example, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ حُمِّلُوا التَّوْرَاتِ ثُمَّ لَمْ يَحْمِلُوهَا كَمَثَلِ الْحِمَارِ يَحْمِلُوا أَسْفَارًا and so on and so forth, these verses about the Jewish clergy that have knowledge but they don't use it. It's like the donkey having books on his back. So the Quran has favorable things to say about Jewish people in general speaking. And then the Jewish clergy, for example, there are some criticisms of it, but there is no verse in the Quran which indicates that we should hate Jews, and there is no verse in the Quran, in the Hadith, there's no Hadith that indicates we should show hostility to Jews because they are Jews. Quite to the contrary, in fact.
Is it the contrast that you can make, the same people that Jesus, peace be upon him, those who took him out, where he's talking about you evil and adulterous generations, you wicked, and all these other things that he calls these people, these certain people, this is the same people that the Quran, God Almighty, is attacking?
Absolutely. These are the people, exactly right. So, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about racism, we can talk about racism in the Bible. When Jesus is meant to have said, you know, that the Gentiles are dogs or so on and so forth, these verses are there. There's no equivalent verse in the Quran. See, the thing is, when you point a finger, you have four fingers pointed back at you. If you want to talk about a religion which can be interpreted in a racist way, then we have to speak about some interpretations of Judaism which talk about the chosen people and the Gentiles and the Goy and all these kinds of things. But these people, these cowards, will never mention these things because they know that they'll be maybe losing support that they so desperately need, either for their Ponzi schemes or for something else. But they know when to shut their mouths. And I think they just realize it's not in their interest to speak about Zionists. And that's why they're not speaking about Zionists, but they speak about Muslims instead.
One more thing before we go to the next clip. You're also a teacher of history, is that correct? Isn't it historically true that Muslims actually, and Jews, academics will admit this, that Islam actually saved the Jewish people?
Absolutely. Many have actually admitted this candidly. Many Jewish historians have admitted this candidly. Especially, we're talking about, you know, the Ottoman Empire after the Spanish Inquisition in 1492. Spanish Inquisition in 1492 and onwards, whereby the Jewish people and the Muslim people were being persecuted in Spain. And the Reconquista happened, and afterwards, you know, these Jewish people migrated to the Ottoman Empire at that time in order to try and find safe haven. And so this is the kind of thing which I even read an article, funny enough, from the Jewish Chronicle, which is an outlet here, which mentions something to this effect. And this is something which is not disputed. Okay, it's not disputed. The fact that the Ottoman Empire, you have Jewish people going from Christian Spain at the time, because it was after Reconquista, going from Christian Spain to the Ottoman Empire and seeking safe haven there, which they did get. And this shows you, and if it wasn't for that, maybe the state of Jewish people all over the world today would be completely different. Maybe there wouldn't be as many Jews as there are in the world at all today.
UK, I was the only.
Have you and Hijab ever done a podcast together?
I'll tell you what Hijab done, just like 12 months ago. Hijab sent letters to my children's home. I say, this is how they operate. Yeah. So he sent legal letters. So what I said is, I said Muhammad Hijab is a caveman, because he is. Yeah. His ideologies belong 1400 years ago with his prophet. Now, what he believes is that it's okay, and he says this, yeah, sexual relationship once a child starts puberty, because that's what Muhammad did. Now, it's hard to have these conversations anyway. No one wants to hear them. Yeah? So I made a video saying about his deranged backward views to try and intimidate me, which is what it was, because that's what they do. He sent letters to my children's home just to let me know he knows where my kids are. Legal letters. Yeah.
Your response?
Yeah, I mean, my solicitor sent Tommy Robinson legal letters for defamation case. I mean, why is he referring to it as his children's home? I don't think the children own the property. I mean, I've got children in my house, but if I do something which is defamatory or libelous to some other entity or person in the United Kingdom or elsewhere, and then letters are thereby sent to my house, I'm not going to say, well, my children can look at that. This is the most pathetic victim playing that you can imagine. And the reason why he's mentioning this is to try and garner sympathy from the audience. Oh, look, you know, this man's trying to intimidate me and this and that. These are legal letters. There's nothing of a criminal basis there or anything like that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, he made claims about me which are defamatory and libelous. And we will see in a court of law whether he can defend himself in front of a British judge. We're not asking him to go to a Sharia council. I haven't told him to go to. Sheikh Haytham is going to preside over this one And then the winner is going, or the person who wins this particular case is going to get this, and the loser, you get killed, for example. This is not going to be the case. This is a British court. So at the end of the day, if you don't want legal letters sent to your home, don't do illegal things. This is a very simple thing. Moreover, look, I mean, this thing about intimidation, the reason why he keeps mentioning that I'm intimidating him is probably because he feels intimidated by me, as we have already mentioned. And Patrick Bet-David made a really excellent point. He said, why have you never debated hijab? The reason why he has never debated me is because it's like a man fighting a child. He knows, and we both know, it will be completely unfair. It will be an unfair thing. Somebody who hasn't even got GCSEs to his name goes head to head with a man who has 6 advanced degrees. 6. One of them from Al-Azhar University. One of them from Oxford University. 4 of them, okay, from universities in the United Kingdom. One of them is not complete. I should say 5. The 6th one's coming soon, the PhD. The point I'm making, this guy, how could he go head to head with a man that spent 15 years compiling academic qualifications in all the things that he has not done? All the things. Politics, I've got a degree in politics. History, I've got a degree in history. Religion, Islam, I've got a degree there. Philosophy, yes, I'm doing my PhD in that. So every single thing that these people get wrong, I've gone to a British institution. I have sat down. I have done hundreds of examinations. I have been tested at least 500 times in my life. Essay, dissertation, thesis, test. And then you bring me a person who's the lowest of the low, a scum, a chav, a man that's not fit to be a student of mine, to come and debate me. And Patrick Bet-David wants me to take this guy seriously, or him seriously. Patrick Bet-David should bring me the biggest academic they can find to speak to me about these topics. Tommy Robinson can accompany him as somebody who brings the coffee and shines the shoes. And if the guy needs anything, he can get it for him. Little butler boy that he's got, wearing the Burberry little clothes that he's wearing, a chav wearing the Burberry. This is unbelievable that this is even being... It's unfair. If you've got a white man who's a liberal, who's got all of those qualifications, they will never suggest a failure to be his debate opponent. But because I'm a brown man, I spend 15 years in universities collecting all these degrees, and you're going to bring me the lowest of the low scumbag to formally debate me? This is not what you would expect for yourself. This is not what you would expect for yourself. So what I'm saying to you is, no problem. I'll debate him. Notwithstanding all these things. Tommy Robinson has rejected every single thing. He's rejected a debate challenge. He has rejected a fight, physical. I'm not saying with me. I'm a heavyweight. I'm not going to fight this man. Okay. Because I'm too big for him. It would be unfair and undignified. It would be unethical. But we've got people that are his size. He's walking around like he's a lightweight. Fine, go and fight a lightweight. We have a boxing match. Noki, you can't fight. You can't debate. You can't think. You can't talk. What are you even doing online? Why are you showing yourself publicly? Who are you? Who are you anyway? You are better in prison. He came out of prison looking like a bit of an old man because of the cocaine potentially that he had stopped taking. And that's what happens when, according to the reports that we've seen, someone stops taking cocaine, like that woman in Canada who said that, you know, he was taking cocaine and using the prostitutes. When you stop taking drugs, maybe he should start following Islam. I think Islam would be perfect for a man like Tommy Robinson. It will put him right in place. It will discipline him. It will give him the right guidance. Maybe Allah will guide him, and maybe Allah will guide Patrick Bet-David. But this kind of behavior, this kind of hooliganism, this kind of cowardice, this kind of debauchery, this is unacceptable, and they must start humbling themselves before the humiliation becomes more severe.
Are you? What do you believe in? Are you a Christian? Are you a Jew? What would you say? Do you believe in God?
Yeah, I'm a Christian.
You're a Christian?
I'm a Christian, yeah. I've been pushed more. So I used to say that I didn't believe. My mum was a Catholic, brought up. But then as I've seen the attacks on Christianity, and I've also seen the decay in British society, and the fall of Britain has come from the fall of belief. We have allowed, since we've stopped believing, it, and what built Great Britain? Christianity. What built everything about us, everything about our nation, that everyone wants to come to it and make it a success, was built on Christianity. Since that's descended, since it's been coming under attack, since people have left it, it's left a void. And that void's being filled. And if we want to understand and remember who we are, you know, as part of our identity, I say to some people, even if you don't believe in Christianity, you don't have to believe in Jesus, that's what built us as a nation. That must be protected. That's part of our identity.
Did I hear him correctly that you can be a Christian and not believe in Jesus?
Say to some people, even if you don't believe in Christianity, you don't have to believe in Jesus.
Did he say that? I didn't hear.
Say to some people, even if you don't believe in Christianity, you don't have to believe in Jesus.
Did he say that? Oh, yeah. If he said that. I mean, the thing is, he was just talking about homosexuality, and he was saying that Islam is a foreign thing because of our views towards homosexuality. But then if he's a Christian, I wonder what his views on homosexuality are now, when you've got verses in the Bible that say, man shall not lie with other man. But maybe that's something that he needs to... Maybe it's one of the rulings that he will decide to forego for personal reasons and other such reasons. But the point I'm making is, at the end of the day, I think this is a publicity stunt. You know, this whole thing about Christianity, that he's come out with a big beard. He talks about Muslims in prison, but he's trying to copy them. You know, he came out with a big beard, coming out of prison, this, that, and the other. He's trying to copy the Muslims at the end of the day. You know, coming out with a big beard and saying that he's a Christian with, you know, and then saying, you know, I also believe in homosexuality and this, that, and the other, or the Islamic position on homosexuality is false. I mean, really, we don't know what his position is. Nor do we care, to be honest, because he's not a person of significance. You know, I think the best thing for him, the best bet for him, the best bet for a man like that is to meet me, to meet Mohammed Hijab in person. And he has to get, you know, his shoe shine kit ready. And then I'll get black shoes, nice black shoes. And I'll put my foot like this. And then I'll say, clean them. And then he makes them spick and span, sparkling, so I can see myself. I can see the champ there on my shoe. And he can, I'll tilt the shoe like that so he can see a little scumbag on the corner. This is what this guy amounts to. He's nothing. He's actually, I think he'll become incompetent. He'll be incompetent to clean my shoe. This is his level. This is a person, a shoe shiner level. He's got absolutely no reason to be speaking academically or this and that. You've got this and you got that. These Muslims. Shut up. Shut up, Tommy. You've got nothing to offer. You had more to offer in the cell than you did outside of it.
Okay, Sneeko. I watched Sneeko convert to Islam, yeah? Otherwise, convert to Islam. He's gay. So he's converted to Islam.
Sneeko's gay.
Well, I've watched a video from him saying, well, I wasn't sure if I was gay or not. Yeah, if you're not sure if you're gay or not, Sneeko, you're gay. Yeah, it's pretty simple. Okay, that's what his words, not mine. So I'm just going by his words. Yeah, but I watch Sneeko, and then he converts to Islam because it's become trendy. Remember, people like us telling the truth about Islam, we were attacked and silenced, and then Islam comes in with all his money, and it becomes very trendy. Yeah, and it becomes trendy because all the money's coming and funding it. Now Sneeko converts, and then he goes and makes some video in Saudi Arabia, very well produced video. He's drawing the American youth. You need to wake up in America. Yeah. The same with Andrew Tate, okay? These people, in my view, so many of the people, I see these TikTokers now.
I don't know why he's gay. He's not. This guy has no argument to make. This guy, and I think he's projecting. Maybe he feels that way. But at the end of the day, look, he's trying to attack Sneeko. The reason why he's trying, you've met Sneeko as well. He's doing a very good job in terms of spreading Islam, trying to stay on the deen despite all of the temptations around him. And this is actually, he's actually seen the fruits of Islam, that it removes the degeneracy, cleans up one's lifestyle. Whenever Robinson, who currently lives that lifestyle, a degenerate lifestyle, because he is himself a junkie and a degenerate, you see, when he sees someone like Sneeko living the pure life, and obviously, it's natural to feel very jealous about this.
I would just like you said. I know Sneeko, and Sneeko, he's looking to get married. Inshallah, he gets married soon. Finds himself a good wife. But
yes,
I don't know. I mean, these asinine statements.
Like an advertisement for him right now. Yeah. if any good sister comes forward, then she can send something to the Dean Show. What's the email? Maybe then.
But you can just connect. It just shows the absurdity. I mean, just to go ahead and to call, you know, this is one of the lowest attack to call somebody this name when somebody's
absolutely party. yeah.
Now, if Andrew Tate now decided he didn't believe in Islam, you know, didn't believe a word of it, he can't even come out and say it. They'll kill him. He can't become the most famous apostate in the world. He'd be dead. They want him more than they want me.
You think they'll kill him?
100%. If I come out now and said Islam's a load of nonsense.
How come they haven't done anything to you? You were in jail and you were having 80 calls a day, 4 hours on the phone. You're doing all the stuff that you're doing while you're at jail. But there was a guy that was a lifer that was trying to put a hit on you to take you out. And you were there, you know, 7 months. How come that didn't happen?
We'll get through these quick. We got a few more and we'll wrap it up. Your response?
Yeah. Patrick actually asked for once a good question. He said, well, if they would kill him, why didn't they kill you?
He gave him some good pushback. A little bit, finally, he pushed back a little bit.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, if this was a thing, why didn't they kill you? You know, that's an excellent question.
Or, and you're a crusader of this message that you're doing. The biggest thing when people say, you know, you're Islamophobic or you're racist or any of that stuff, it's not about that. My interpretation of how I receive you is, look, if you come to my city, and I have neighbors, and if I go into a city and it's run by Scientologists and the city gets better, I don't care what your religion is. If you come into a city and you're Jehovah and the economy does better, you create jobs, safer, you got to take care of your kids, I'm good with that. But the whole point is, if you're coming into a city and you bring in ruckus, chaos, crime, and you want us to adjust to you, you came to us. I didn't come to America trying to change America to my leanings. I came to America because America offered me what life I wanted.
Okay, this is very important here because, again, he's coming at it like very logically saying, oh, look, it doesn't matter if you're a Scientologist, if you're whatever religion, if you come in to the neighborhood, to the city, you're making it better, it's all good. But then he contrasts that and he said he's making people now, again, suspicious of Islam, you know, putting doubts out there, you know, spreading this fear that if Islam comes, Islam is wreaking havoc.
What people need to understand is the historical context of Muslims coming to Great Britain, okay? And the historical context is that the majority of Muslims in Great Britain come from former colonies, and they were invited to come by Great Britain for the reasons of reconstructing the country after World War II. Now, Great Britain did not have at the time a very rigorous selection criterion where they're trying to bring in, you know, engineers and doctors. They wanted low-skilled workers. Now, what that comes with is when you bring people of a working-class background from ex-colonies and now you had, after that, war-torn countries, the like, for example, Afghanistan and Somalia. These are two major demographics in the UK of Muslims. They came after the wars, two particular wars, which were perpetuated, by the way, and started in one way or another by the colonial powers, by the European powers. If it wasn't for the colonial powers, for example, Afghanistan would not have happened. So you got all these new immigrants who come from war-torn countries, wars that you started, and then you've got these other immigrants that come because of World War II, and the wars that you also engaged in, okay, and then you wanted someone to build your country, it's just not going to be the case that you're going to tell these people to come. And once they've done the job of reconstructing your country, using the resources from their country that your country has stolen, after all of that has happened, it's not going to be the case that you're going to use them and then discard them like a prostitute. That's not going to happen. And so it was due to the historical conditions that you have people in Great Britain from Muslim backgrounds who also happen to be from working class backgrounds. And I've made this point before, and I'll make this point again. Crime is significantly higher when people are of a working class background, regardless of race or religion. If you look at the places in America where crime is the highest, it's also where the money is the lowest, where people have the lowest money. You know, for example, in Detroit, for example, in some areas, in even Chicago, you know, you have some very high crime, and it's in ghettos where people don't have, they're disenfranchised, they don't have the same money as some guy in California, in Santa Clara. That's just a fact. And it just so happens to be the case that Muslims in the United States of America
who had come in, for example, because of a rigorous selection criterion, and who, for example, have professional backgrounds like engineers or doctors or whatever it may be, they don't engage in the crimes that you're talking about. So it's just the case that when you have poor people find it rational to take higher risks, including criminal risks, which, for example, include drug use, drug selling, etc., because they feel like the risk is worth taking. They have less to lose. That's just how it works. And so, if you're making an argument about Muslims coming into a country, I think this is a weak argument because, as I mentioned, there is more data, sociological data, to suggest that people of a poorer background, for example, look at the data regarding Latin Americans. And in fact, the right wing do mention this. Latin Americans from Mexico, etc. Okay, they, when they come in, because they are poorer, they have less to live for, if you like, who are willing to commit more crimes. A lot of them. This is a generalization of some Latin Americans and some Muslims from Muslim countries and some people, whoever it may be, poor. Poor people are more likely to commit crimes. And so if the criteria, if you want less crime in your country, then don't bring in poor people, whatever background they are. Because if you want less crime by bringing in poor people, then you're going to have more crime. Or if you have a selection criterion, an immigration criterion, where you say, okay, well, they have to have this amount in their account, or they have to have this professional background, or whatever it is, you can't commit the mistake, okay, and then blame us for it at the end of the day. This is your mistake. If you didn't think, you didn't have the foresight, your politicians in the 50s and 60s didn't have the foresight to think this would happen. That's not our issue. That's your issue.
I'm this. What's the solution? The one thing a lot of people don't want to talk about, Charlie Kirk tweeted something 3 days ago. And his tweet was, Muslim Islam is not compatible with Western ideology or something like that. What does he say? Islam is not compatible with Western civilization. He posted it. 66 million views?
Well, the European Court of Human Rights said in 2007, I think, that Sharia is incompatible with Western civilization.
Now, look what your friend Dan says on the bottom.
I completely disagree. Yeah, of course, because he's getting paid by Iran. Of course he's going to.
See, here's the thing.
You saw this tweet by Charlie, right? You actually called him out to have a discussion with you. And it's that tweet, Islam is not compatible with Western civilization. What do you want to say?
Well, I mean, first of all, what made Western civilization the arbiter of correct morality? Because if you think about the phrasing of that sentence, Islam is not compatible with Western civilization, it already presupposes the superiority of Western civilization, right? It's as if you have a ruler, and that ruler is called Western civilization, and you're measuring all other civilizations with it, as if it all has to align with that ruler. We're saying that we reject that in the first place, and that if you want to have a proper conversation about correct morality, you have to start from an equal footing, okay? You have to start from an equal footing. So the fact that you're saying, okay, well, Islam is not, you know, compatible with Western civilization itself is not compatible with itself. Right-wing people are not compatible with left-wing people. People that believe in transgender's rights are not compatible with people who don't believe in those rights. People who believe in abortion are not compatible with people who don't believe in abortion. People who believe in affirmative action are not compatible with people who don't believe in affirmative action. People who believe in MAGA are not compatible with people who don't believe in MAGA. And so on and so forth. This statement commits multiple fallacies and makes so much sweeping generalizations that it beggars belief that people would take this and run with it in the way that they have. Because the truth of the matter is, it assumes Western civilization is one thing. Western civilization is many things at the same time. Western civilization, there is no Western civilization. Western civilization is actually Western civilizations. British culture is different to American culture. French culture is different to German culture. Where does the West start? Where does the West even end? Is Spain part of Western civilization? Okay, what about Poland? Is that the limits of Western civilization, or is that more Orthodox civilization? So there's so many questions to be made about this. But the point is, you know,
I think at the end of the day, people are trying to create divides. And I understand that. But if you want to make an argument, then make it. If I say, okay, well, Islam is Western civilization, for example, is incompatible with Islam. I've made Islam now the standard. I've made Western civilization that which compares to it. You wouldn't care too much about that statement. You'd probably agree with it. So why do you think I care so much about, do you think it offends me that we're not in your image? I mean, do you really think it offends me that Islam doesn't line up with transgender rights or, for example, homosexual, you know, acceptability or normativity? I don't care about that. In fact, I think that's what makes Islam pure in many ways.
There's no argument there. It's just a set of, or there is a proposition of a generalized sort, which doesn't aim to achieve anything except for, you know, energize the base, the MAGA base.
Can you do the same thing and replace Islam with Christianity or Judaism or other religions and say the same thing?
Yeah, that's a good point. Judaism. To what extent is Judaism compatible with Western civilization? So put it this way, right? If what is Western civilization? If you're saying, okay, well, liberalism, okay, classical liberalism or whatever it may be, okay, fine. To what extent is Orthodox Judaism compatible with classical liberalism, social liberalism, the Hahn principle, J.S. Mill? To what extent is Christianity or Catholicism even compatible with those things? Yes, you could. So the point is Western civilization, you must appreciate Christianity is not, we've made this point before, is not part of Western civilization. Christianity is imported into Western civilization. Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion, okay? According to them, they say that it started in Bethlehem, okay? So why is Christianity synonymous with the West when it started in the Middle East? Why do you assume Christianity already originates in the West? It doesn't already. I don't think Jesus was born in Dallas, according to you. So at the end of the day, you know, Western civilization, you need to reassess the definitions here, because these are little catchphrases that make disenfranchised ignoramuses, rednecks and hillbillies and chavs, makes them feel good about themselves and give them a semblance of self-worth. But the truth is, they don't have a sliver of it, because what they do have is an inferiority complex, and they know if there is such a thing as Western civilization, it's on the descendancy. It's going to be one of the shortest lived empires in the world. They need to think about China. Stop thinking about Iran, okay? Because they keep talking about Iran. They really need to start thinking about China. Okay, China is developing at a rapid rate and is posing an economic and military threat to the United States of America, the like of which the United States have never seen before. So if there's anything that you need to focus on is China, because China's already outstripping you. And in the next 10 to 20 years, economically, it will be a superpower, which would have outstripped America in every single way, except maybe culturally, okay, because there is a cultural power that, you know, Western civilization does have. You need to focus on that instead of focusing on Muslim minorities in cities in Bradford and Birmingham or whatever. That's not your enemy. Believe me, that's the least of your worries.
We got two more clips and we'll come to a close.
I love hearing different perspectives. I'm a freedom of speech absolutist. And if somebody watches this, they say, well, he's a racist. He's a Islamophobe. He's this, he's that. Great. Listen to it and do your own due diligence and then do your own research. If you say he is, great. If you say no, I didn't know the side of him, then do research as well. But for me, in order to really find out who the person is, until you sit down kneecap to kneecap, talk to them, you're not going to really find out about it.
One thing important about this clip where Patrick was saying that you got to sit kneecap to kneecap. I want to get the perspective. I want to understand. Why doesn't he do that with Muslims? Why doesn't he come and invite Muslims? He had that one thing that we were a part of. And from there, it just got derailed. And he has.
Yeah, to be fair, he has invited me. The thing is, I couldn't go to America because the visa is hard to get for us now. And that's because MAGA, Donald Trump, is making it difficult for almost all Muslim conservatives, not just myself and many other people in the industry, but even fighters like Hamza Chimaev and Khabib's father and stuff like that are finding it hard to get into America. So if Patrick Bet-David wants to have a conversation with us, he's going to have to come to London or he's going to have to go to another country if he wants a physical conversation.
he can come to us. We'll host him. We'll show him respect. We'll show him you can bring your cameras like Jordan Peterson did or whatever it is. That's the only way we're going to do it. But, you know, I mean, whether it's a debate with Robinson, which, you know, if he makes that happen, that's fine. But if you can get me someone a bit higher in terms of educational ability, then that's even better. Or whether it's just a conversation with him. We're always open to speak about Islam. And just, I think he really just needs the basics. I really just think that Patrick Bet-David needs to go to the basics of what Islam is and just the pure basics. Or whether he wants to have a discussion about society or whatever, we're always open and we're always ready.
Would you travel? You can go to Jamaica, right? That's where he had this interview with
Is it? Tommy. Yeah, I'd go to Jamaica.
You can go to Jamaica?
Yeah, okay. Well, why has he got a little house in Jamaica or something?
No, this is where, because Tommy couldn't come to America. So.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe we can ask him. I can ask him and see if that's a possibility. But you're willing to come, if he doesn't, to come down to Jamaica?
Of course. Yes. I'll come to Jamaica. Yeah.
Let's finish it off with this last clip.
Islam's, that's if you recognize it as a religion. It's an ideology. It's not just a religion.
China said it's a mental illness. You know, I don't know if you saw that or not. There were stories about some countries that talk about Islam is not a religion.
The last thing is it's a complete way of life. It's a complete way of life, and it's a danger to the West.
I think it's a beautiful way to close because they're asking the question, what is Islam? So let's give it to them.
I think he was right on that point. It is a complete way of life. Yeah, it's absolutely right. Complete way of life. I think that's a good one. I mean, deen, as this is the deen show, right? It does mean a way of life. I mean, that's what it means. And it's a way of life which explains to you where you came from, what you're doing here, and where you're going. It's a way of life which explains to you your purpose. It's a way of life which explains to you that your purpose is to submit and worship one God. Submit and worship one God in the same way as everything else in creation is submitting its will to the nature, to the laws of nature, to the laws of God. We are to do what everything else is doing around us. Just like everything in the universe is submitting itself to the laws of nature, the laws of physics, we too, voluntarily and volitionally, should also volunteer to submit ourselves and worship one God. This is the same God that Abraham believed in. That's mentioned in the Bible. It's the same God that Moses believed in. That's mentioned in the Bible. It's the same God that Jesus believed in, which is mentioned in the Bible in the book of Acts, where it says, a man amongst men sent with wonders and miracles and signs which God did through him. We believe that Jesus Christ was a man, a messenger, that was sent to people, that God sent, and who did wonders and miracles and signs which God did through him. We believe in that wholeheartedly. We believe in his mother, Mary, was Siddiqa. She was chaste. She was pure. She is the highest woman in Islam. There are so many similarities between the religion of Islam and the religion of Christianity. The major difference, of course, is in the nature of God, where we do not believe that God is a man or that he is a triune God, that the Father is God, the Son is God, or the Holy Spirit is God, that we believe there's only one God, and that one God is the creator of the universe, the creator of all that exists, that Allah had sent messengers with two things, with a message, which is a message of submission, but also with an evidence. And for those who are interested in knowing what the evidences of Islam are, there are so many evidences of Islam, which you can find on my website, MuhammadHijab.com, where it talks about evidences for the proof of Islam, evidences relating to prophecies, evidences related to the linguistic miracle of the Quran, evidences related to the structure of the Quran, evidence related to the naturalistic phenomena that is mentioned in the Quran that perfectly encapsulates some of the scientific realities that we have understood today, but which would have been understandable at the time of the Prophet and in all the times between, and evidences which relate to historical accuracies that could not have been known by Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam at the time, things relating to dead languages that could not have been retrieved.
We have the evidence. We have the truth. We have Islam. And we are not trying to force or sell this religion to anybody. In fact, we just invite people to Islam, and that's all we can do. And they can accept Islam. They can become Muslims. No matter what your crimes are, or what you have done, or what sins you have amassed, or what things you have done, whether you are Tommy Robinson or even Benjamin Netanyahu, whoever you are, you can be forgiven. Allah, His mercy is greater than anybody's sins. And anybody who embraces Islam will have all of their sins forgiven, and in fact even transformed into good deeds, and will start a new beginning as a clean slate, purified like the way his mother gave birth to him, newborn. And this is an invitation to the entire world. وَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيُؤْمِنْ وَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيَكْفُرْ Whoever wants to can believe, and whoever wants to can disbelieve. لَكُمْ دِينُكُمْ وَلِيَ دِينَ You will have your religion, and we will have ours.
Patrick, when David has his co-host, and if he was to ask him or some of his other friends what they actually believe about Jesus, and if they're being honest, they believe that he's a rebel, he's burning in the hellfire, and they say some disgusting things about his mother. What would you say as a Muslim about Jesus? Do you believe that Jesus did Islam? Was he a Muslim? What do you have to say about Jesus?
The only other major world religion which believes in Jesus in a capacity that is holy is Islam. We believe that he was a messenger, just like Christians believe that he was a messenger. We believe that he was the Messiah, just like Christians believe that he was the Messiah. We believe that he did miracles, that he cured the dead. He rose the dead with God's permission. He cured the blind with God's permission. He cured the leper with God's permission. He even did miracles that are mentioned in some of the Apocrypha and some of the other texts, but are also mentioned in the Quran, relating to creating from a clay pigeon, a real pigeon. We believe in so many miracles that Jesus Christ has done. We believe that he came from the Virgin Mary, the chaste, the Virgin Mary. And we believe that he is one of the greatest prophets and men that have ever existed, and that he was a good man, and that we must follow him. And that if being Christian means following Christ, that all Muslims are Christians in the sense that we must all follow Christ, and that he is our role model, just like Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is our role model, and just like Abraham is our role model, and just like Moses is our role model. This is the Islamic belief. And if you don't believe me, because many people now listening to this will not believe that this is the Islamic belief. They have been sold a lie. They thought we believed in a moon god. They think we believed in a sun god. I even saw something from Tucker Carlson, or I don't know who it was, saying that the Sunnis, you know, worship the sun or something like because of Sunni or something to that effect. It might not have been Tucker Carlson, somebody. This is rank ignorance. And it's, if you don't want to become Muslim, that's fine. But I wouldn't want to live with myself not knowing the belief of one quarter of the world's population, 25%, according to Pew, of the world's population is Muslim. 2 billion people that are living on this earth are Muslim. Why would you want to live with yourself being that ignorant of something which occupies such a great extent over a quarter population of the world? So even if you don't want to become Muslim, enhance your cultural capital, increase your knowledge, become more cultured, and learn about Islam. Learn about the basics of Islam. That's what I advise everybody to do.
Last question. Is Islam a new religion brought by Muhammad? Was it something that he made up, or is this something that was from the beginning?
It was something that was from the beginning, and that's why we believe that Abraham and Moses and all of these were Muslims. Now someone will say this is ahistorical and very ridiculous. How can you believe that Abraham and Moses, much less Jesus, because when we say this, say Jesus was Muslim, they say this is embarrassing. This is, how can you say this? Well, because they've understood Islam to mean following Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They don't understand what Islam means. Islam means submission. Islam means submission to one God, to the will of one God. And as such, all of the people who existed at the time of Abraham would have had to follow him. Everybody who existed at the time of Moses would have had to follow him. And everyone who existed at the time of Jesus would have had to follow him.
And all of them said the same thing, which was that you have to believe and worship in one God, which is why the Quran mentions مَا كَانَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ يَهُودِيًّا وَلَا نَصْرَانِيًّا وَلَكِنْ كَانَ حَنِيفًا مُسْلِمًا وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. That Abraham was not a Jew, nor was he a Christian, but he was upright and submissive, and he was not of the polytheists. Because how could he be a Jew? And Judaism is named after Judah, who is one of the grandsons of Abraham. How could he be a follower of his own grandson? Likewise, how could he be a Christian, a follower of Christ, when Christ did not exist at the time? What he was, in fact, was somebody who was sent by God. He was a prophet, a messenger, and he worshipped in one God and submitted to one God. And that is what we call a Muslim. And so Islam, not something that started with Muhammad. It was something which was continued by him. And that's why in the Quran, in chapter 46, Surah Al-Ahqaf, Allah mentions, قُلْ مَا كُنْتُ بِدْعًا مِنَ الرُّسُلِي وَمَا كُنْتُ أَدْرِي مَا يُفْعَلُ بِي وَلَا بِكُمْ. That say, I was not an innovation among the messengers, and I don't know what's going to happen to me or what's going to happen to you. So Allah is telling the Prophet, say to the people, I'm not something new. I'm not an innovation. I'm the same thing as was there before. I'm the same thing as came to Moses. I'm the same thing as came to Abraham. And I'm the same thing as came all the way back to the first human being, Adam, who was a prophet as well. So Islam was always there, but it had different messengers for different times and different peoples.
This is a longer episode. We had a lot to cover, and alhamdulillah, I did a great job. I want to thank you. Thank you. Inshallah, it'll be a benefit, and hopefully people can benefit from this. And anything else, closing remarks?
We need to meet up. You know, it's been too long, Eddie. We have to meet up, you know?
Yes. We're going to have to meet up soon, inshallah.
I think Hoyt Gracie is coming to the UK, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's Muslim, isn't he?
Yes, he took Hoyt Gracie took a shahada. He was just with my family in Bosnia, actually. He visited Bosnia for the first time. And a man came up to him, and he confirmed this. He said, hey, are you? Because he heard. He said, are you Muslim? And he said, yes, I'm Muslim. So he's amazing. And he took a shahada in the public. And
guys, we got some amazing news for you. We're in front of the Dean Center. We have a major surprise coming up. Legend Hoyt Gracie here with us at the Dean Show.
Ashhadu al la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasul.
He took a shahada with us in Florida at the Dean Center.
Well, you guys, this is the kind of thing which is people don't realize what that the magnitude of that. This is the kind of work, whatever kind of fundraising that is happening with the Dean Show. I want to say that people at home that know about the projects that are taking place in Florida and other places with a man like Eddie, who's an integrous man, an honorable man, a man who has great standing in the community and has had more impact than any other podcaster in the history of English-speaking podcasting, would be a fool not to give money and to trust this man with all the projects that he's partaking in, considering his dedication and considering his continuity and his persistence in the work that he does. Give money to whatever project that he's running. Have you still got the project happening in Florida?
Yes, alhamdulillah. Yes.
And they can give money. They can give money to this massive project because you showed me some of the things that are happening there.
Yes, alhamdulillah. It's coming along.
Inshallah, they will do that because that will be massive thing on their scales in the Day of Judgment. And we need it because if we don't do it, the enemies will do it. And if the enemies do it, we're already in trouble. We're already being attacked by everybody. We need the Muslim community to give money to the noble and honorable project, which is like no other project to the United States, you know, with a dawah emphasis, with one of the most, if not the most experienced da'i in the United States, leading it, Eddie from the Dean Show. You would be absolutely mad not to give money to this project. Inshallah, click the link below and give very generously.
Thank you, my brother. Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much.